and welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people about all the things you need to know in the world of innovation, business, design, tech, and culture. I'm Fazlan Esau, and today we're joined by two new label mates, as well as Nick Sherrod and Josh Nixon from the Label Sessions team. Quick welcome, hello and welcome to Vicky Joshi, a champion of the outside-in customer-first approach who has worked across insurance, financial services, tech, consumer brands, aligning product, service, and teams to truly meet customer needs. Welcome, Vicky. So big welcome to Patricia Lawton, who has worked across some of Europe's most complex industrial environments in both legacy and emerging sectors to turn abstract sustainability ambitions into tangible, measurable outcomes for improving environmental performance as well as business resilience. Mattel has just published a new global study on how play is changing around the world and in some ways has become more important than ever. How can we design for play, or to put it another way, how can we design more playfully when we're in sort of grown-up industries?
That is an interesting one you know, for example, if we speak about sustainability, this is for everyone at all organization level. It is complex, and the way to make it exciting to generate positive impact could be with gamification. And when you start to gamify, for example, efficiency on the shop floor, all of a sudden it generates excitement, because not only people are aiming for efficiency gains, but they can be rewarded on something, and it could be something concrete or just we've been the most efficient team this week, for example, and then it becomes a game. And it can be the same with customers. And we've discussed about, you know, different cultures, different geographies that can influence a value proposition. And if you listen your customers, as rightly suggested by Vicky earlier, I mean, you can change your value proposition. And if you win, then there is again this aspect of the game. So that could be, sounds like, this is a new way. And I know that VR organization already implementing this gamification aspect. And there is, in UK, Sandridge Manufacturing, who already applied this one, and they improved tremendously their efficiency. And of course, the environmental impact, which is connected to that. So there are many applications where game is not only for kids, but could be spread further.
I agree. Absolutely. I see it every day. And I used to see it every day when I was back in my professional services world as well. So, you know, if I was going in and working with the board or an exec team of a big financial services organization, it was not uncommon, if I was going in to talk to them about what they needed to do differently with their customer strategy, that I wouldn't start the day by asking them all to take their shoes off before they entered the room and put their customer slippers on. Because I needed them to sort of realize that we're going to a slightly different place. This might feel a little bit uncomfortable. We're going to talk about things that we're learning from an outside-in perspective. We're not going to assume we've got all of the answers. I mean, that's a tiny little thing that's playful, but actually that little moment where everyone's a bit like, oh my goodness, what is this, means that people are more susceptible to being open to thinking differently and maybe approaching things in a slightly different way. We've rolled out things like empathy labs. So empathy labs are a great way of being able to get an organization to understand what it might be like for somebody that's got accessibility or disability needs and they need things to be done differently. Well, you know, having even just 15 minutes and a go at having a lived experience where somebody might be partially sighted and they're trying to complete something on your website. You know, we talked earlier about the importance of digital. We have got to design those digital experiences in an accessible way. Otherwise, we are actually making it very difficult for large proportions of society to get access to services and products that they need moving forward. But you need to do that in a way that feels like it's emotionally connected with people. And to do that, you need to do that in a sort of slightly playful way, even though it's a really like important and tough subject to cover off. Co-creative sessions. I mean, you know, some of the best things I've ever designed in new products and propositions have been with, you know, execs from different parts of an organization, right down to people on the front line with customers in the room. And again, everybody coming together to go, okay, what's the problem we're actually trying to solve? And what are the different options that we've got? How would we mock that up? And what could that look like? We use Lego to build what a new product interface could like. There's loads of different ways. I think, you know, I don't know about you guys, but as an adult, I still love doing some of the things that I loved doing when I was a kid. We recently went to Vienna at the end of last year, and I went ice skating for the first time. That I have done in ages, but it just brings back that little bit of joy. And why shouldn't we use some of those kind of joyful moments and ways of doing things in our work on a day-to-day basis to drive great outcomes and great new products and service innovation for our customers? Yeah. I love it.
I think it's such a big thing. There's actually a really interesting book written by one of our label roster, actually Pat Kane's book called The Play Ethic. And actually, Patricia, to your point, he's really passionate about playfulness in general. He's also an artist as well. But also applying that to sustainability on the basis of actually one of the things that make us most human and innovative is play. So kind of like playing into that and is actually one of his key ideas. I think also one of the things that's quite nice in the Battelle report as well is that they're kind of pointing out play clearly, and it's a toy company. So kind of therefore that kind of childish instance of play, but also talking about things like quizzing and sport, like playfulness is actually really big in an adult culture too. Just we don't talk about it as much. And I guess the two things I was just reading through thinking of was one was a slight sort of counter to some of the stuff that people talk around when it comes to new tech and AI and product development, which at the moment is all very focused on immersion. And to some level, I think that's a bit of a false track to take, because actually the opportunity is to make them more playful and make them more fun to be a part of is actually the thing. And then I guess kind of to your point, Vicky, as well, I think one of the things that really stuck out to me through that report was, you know, the importance of play across all kind of areas of life. But yet in remote work in particular, companies have lost so much of this. Mm-hmm. So in terms of physical environments, they're still kind of relatively playful. There's lots of stuff which we kind of culturally learn. I go on about this a lot, but I do think companies, even very big companies, really miss things like the Friday afternoon time in the office that it used to be, where you had some of that less formal work time, but things happened and people bonded and such like. But there's a big challenge, I think, right now, about how do you design playfulness without it being necessarily a kind of childish task, if you like. How do you make remote work more playful?
I agree. I think it is doable, though. But I think you've got to, it's like everything, isn't it? It's not going to happen by accident. You've got to consciously try and find those ways where you can bring that kind of playful connection back together.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I think so many organizations have got so many priorities at the moment. And when they're thinking about like smart working, hybrid working, or whatever it is that they're trying to do and figure out how do we get people back into the office because we're paying for this building and we know that human connection is really important. And, you know, they're trying to work through what their strategies look like. I think this is absolutely a fundamental strand of that strategy. How do we make sure that when we're either in a hybrid working environment or in a virtual working environment, we've still got the ability to give permission for our people to play, and we've give them the permission and the tools to do that differently. Mm-hmm. You know, Teams and all the other various different platforms and things that people use every day have got some amazing different ways. You can use them in loads and loads of different ways. You just need to teach people. And you need to teach people how to use them and get the most out of them. And at the moment, most people, I would say 90% of people, know how to use the sort of basic functionality that they use day in, day out to do meetings. There's probably loads of extra things, and I know there's loads of extra things that they could do to get more innovation, more playfulness out of their teams in a virtual world. But you've got to design that into your ways of working consciously. It's not going to happen accidentally.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. But and it's so weird, though, because it still seems slightly countercultural to say it, but actually there's a massive background of research around it. It's not like it's actually a controversial thing to say, but somehow we've kind of got, especially in remote working cultures, I think, companies have got really into this thing of like cutting out the stuff that isn't efficient. And therefore you've got to get on a call and immediately you've got to go through your five agenda items and then you leave. There's something about, it's almost like, you know, AI can do some of the grunt work anyway. So how do we actually design the human work in a way that people might actually enjoy and therefore do better?
So what you're saying, Nick, is you're enjoying LinkedIn games?
I've never understood that. That's one thing I don't understand. But maybe I need to play. I don't know why I want to play Tetris with someone I've met.
The rest of your people.
Maybe I give it a go.
Awesome. I also do not understand LinkedIn games. Just keep stunning.
Someone's even know LinkedIn had games to be.
Neither does LinkedIn.
It pops in when someone would know.